Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome. My name is Lisa Welker Finney, and I'm from Boston Scientific, and I'll be the moderator of the panel today. What I'd like to do is first ask if there are any Boston Scientific women in the audience, if you could stand up. All right, congratulations and welcome. Thank you very much. So Boston Scientific is hosting this event today, and really it's a discussion, and that's the way that we'd like to have it, a very interactive dialogue. So we'll be asking our panelists some questions as well. We're going to flip to the audience to make sure that we really are understanding what questions you might have that we could potentially answer for you. We'll try really hard. So our central theme today that we're going to talk about is really leadership, and we're going to talk about leadership in the STEM field. We're going to, as the announcement said, debunk some of those myths. So how many of you are STEM majors right now? All right, good. Very cool, right? Well, one thing that I wanted to share with you is that 25% of all the engineers at Boston Scientific are women. Yay! Now, just like all the speakers have said today, we have more work to do, right? But when you think about it, only 13%, right?
Yep.
Of women graduate in STEM fields a year.
Or engineers.
Engineers. That's really, really small. So we know that we've got a lot of work to do at Boston, and we love that work. And you're going to hear that enthusiasm and passion from our panelists. So I'm just going to go right in and introduce them. That's me. And so let me start here with Marilee. So welcome, Marilee Grant. She is our Director of Communication. She is a speech communication major, actually community relations. She has had a tremendous career, and she has a lot of wonderful things to be able to share with you, and she's a very large proponent of STEM programs in Minneapolis. Can you put your hands together for Marilee? And I can't believe that, four boys, 13 to 21. Wow. I have two 22-year-old twins, so I get that. And next, please welcome Heidi Vlasic. So Heidi is a principal product performance engineer, and she also develops STEM partnerships. She has a long and storied career, even though she looked like she started maybe just about 5 years ago. She has a grown daughter as well, so just amazes me how everyone manages that work and family piece, and we're going to talk about that a little bit. So please welcome Heidi. And then Carrie DiPietro, who is our Director of Global Clinical Quality. And she's had a very interesting career as well. So it looks like Bose Corporation was a major part of her starting out. So she has really, and then spandex. So I don't know about any of you, but that's like one of my favorite products. Buffet dresses, buffet pants, you know, so that you have a little bit of room as you go along. But she's held a lot of different roles within all the organizations that she's had. And she has an 8-year-old daughter and a 9-year-old son. So please welcome Carrie. And then our last panelist, but not least, is Mona Patel. She is a vice president of clinical training and education. She also has a strong engineering background and also started with us when you were just out of kindergarten, maybe. So Mona's going to tell you a little about her career as well. She's been with us a little bit over 10 years, and she has two teenage boys. So please welcome Mona. Okay, so you ready to get going? All right, so why don't we start trying to debunk some of those myths that we hear and talk about. So what I'd like to ask you about is each of you has a story about your schooling or career and how you made your career choice. So I'm wondering if you could just take a minute or two and tell us, how did you make your career choice and did somebody influence that career for you? Marilee, how about if we start with you?
I would say, I don't know if you've seen that on TV before. I think it's on Channel 2. One of these things is not like the others. I do not have a STEM degree, but I think that this is a great example that there are non-STEM jobs at STEM companies. and it's really important for those of us who have communications degrees and communications abilities to be able to play a role at STEM companies and work as translators and work as communicators of what that technology is all about. So that is my passion and that's my skill set. However, I've had a great opportunity at Boston Scientific to be able to grow and understand the need for STEM and the need for people to pursue STEM careers. And so I'm really fortunate to be able to be in the role that I'm in community relations, to be able to focus on opening up a pipeline for more women and more students of color to become engineers and scientists so that our population of employees reflects the patients that we treat and the world that we live in. So I'm very fortunate for that.
I love that, and that's really a non-traditional career field if we think about STEM, which is great to have you on the panel. I also have one of those non-traditional careers in STEM. I'm a vice president of human resources, which is not really deep into the research and manufacturing end of the business or even the sales or marketing or clinical training end, but it definitely touches on all those different areas and having the ability to know and understand all different kinds of jobs and people that it takes to make the collection of individuals we have that really impacts the community and our patients. So thank you. Carrie, would you like to pick up that question?
Sure. So, you know, when I was in school, I was telling some of the girls earlier that I said I like science and I like math, but I don't like physics, and I don't want to be a teacher, and I just didn't know any women in engineering, and I didn't really understand what the options were. And a girl in my chemistry class said, "You should be a chemical engineer. They make a lot of money. It sounds good." I said, "Okay." And I did. I actually, and I went to my brother-in-law who was an engineer, and he said, "Don't do that. It's the hardest engineering. Don't do it." Of course, being a 16-year-old girl, I'm like, "You don't tell me what to do. That's exactly what I'm going to do." And it was, and it turned out to be a great choice for me. And I've been very lucky. I've had some key women, and actually key peers, women in my, I graduated with only 6 women in my engineering class, and we still are in contact today, and actually 3 of us went to the same high school. And that peer group and those women have really helped me throughout my career in making those choices as I've gone through, because there are some bumps in the road. It can be difficult, especially if you don't really know what you're doing.
Great. Thank you. Heidi, how about you?
Well, when I was in elementary school, I had a treehouse, and my girlfriend and I were sleeping out overnight in there, and a bird hit the window and dropped dead on the ground. And instead of crying over this, my girlfriend, Christy, and I decided we were going to dissect this bird. And we did. I went in and asked my mom for
how old were you?
And I didn't tell her what it was for. And I was fascinated, and so was Christy. And I've lost contact with Christy, but that fascination you wonder why? But that fascination never ended for me. And I wanted to do something in the medical field, but medical school didn't necessarily appeal to me. You know, another 8-9 years after college didn't really appeal to me. And so I had the opportunity to do an internship at the FDA in Minneapolis. And I worked in a pesticide lab and in a drug lab, a pharmaceutical lab there. And I saw all of the opportunities that were available in medical product design, research, manufacturing. And I knew that I could do this and finished up my degree. I went to St. Olaf College, a very small place. And I started out in the biotech field. Secret is I'm not really an engineer. I just play one in real life. And so I'm actually a cell biologist and started off in the biotech field. And then I took a change and went into medical devices and a combination of medical devices and drug delivery. And that was super fascinating to me. The technology was fascinating. And I didn't have to put on a bunny suit in a clean room, so that was an advantage. And I ended up moving through that and into a management track role. But then I have 2 children, and both of them have chronic health conditions. And so they needed my time, and so I took a switch back to technical track. And so the ability to switch back and forth has been valuable to me.
Wonderful. Now, you lost track of Christy. Do you still have the bird? Inquiring minds want to know. Mona, how about you?
Well, you might have heard Lupita talk about like 10 different choices she had. Well, given that I'm of Indian descent, I had 3 choices. I was going to be a doctor, I was going to become an engineer, or I was going to become a lawyer. Given my parents were both doctors, I had 2 choices. I was going to be a physician, or I was going to be an engineer. And I remember I had a chance to rotate, or I guess a summer, sort of a month, to follow a surgeon around, and this was the end of high school. And I saw these cool little devices that he was using, and, you know, things that are blinking, and I was just like, look at that. He really needs all those cool devices to do what he does. And so from a pretty early age, I was interested in the medical device area. Now, much like you all, I think I heard Carrie talk about a friend, and one of my friends wanted to become a biomedical engineer. I've never heard of that. And at that time, that sounded great. I'm going to go become a biomedical engineer, and then I'm going to become a doctor. I'm going to kill 2 birds with 1 stone. That's my story.
Wonderful.
Actually, I didn't kill the 2nd stone, though.
But have had a great career. Mona actually has most recently been nominated and was on the cover, right, of the Diversity magazine for STEM, and Boston Scientific is the only company in medical devices that was even honored in that process. So that is fabulous.
Thank you. Speaks volumes about the women here.
I was getting to Carrie as well. And also Carrie as well. So when you look at this on this panel.
Heidi.
Heidi, then we look at saying we have 2 really incredible women out of many, many incredible women at Boston Scientific that are both up here with you. And they will stay after to answer questions if you have them as well. So ladies, let's talk for a couple minutes about challenges. I know that we talked last night and we talked a little bit today, and every time we get together we talk a little bit more about those speed bumps that we have, and sometimes they're bigger than speed bumps and sometimes they're smaller. So Heidi, why don't we start with you? What's a speed bump you've encountered in your life and how did you get over that?
Well, I would say I had 2 in my career, and the first was when I was at a combination product company, and I was really enjoying the technology. I really enjoyed the lab work. I enjoyed working with the development team. I enjoyed manufacturing experience at pilot scale. But I was looking for an opportunity to get into management, and that really didn't exist unless I moved to the San Francisco area. And I really didn't want to move my family there. And my husband said, you might be able to move there on your own. And I really faced a hard choice because the group I was with and the technology I was with was so interesting and exciting to me. So I made the move to a different company to take that management opportunity. And that was very hard for me to leave this group in technology, but it was one of the best things I did. And so as Lupita said, just face the dragon and go do it. So that's what I did. The second was when I was in a corporate management role, we were doing a joint commission accreditation for patient home care. So when someone takes care of you or your relatives in the home, those caregivers are most of the time certified. And we were doing that kind of a program. And that went well, and my next project was Medicare compliance at that company. And my daughter was ill, and we didn't know what was going on. And I decided at that time I couldn't do both things. And, you know, we talk about that myth of having it all. Well, it just depends on how you define all. What is all for you? And to me at that time, my child was more important to me. So I left management track and moved back to technical track. And that was a very good move for me. I learned things that I did not expect to learn. And those have been very valuable.
That's a wonderful story because it's really about how you define it in your own life. And so what works for one of us isn't going to work for someone else, right? It's all individual choices. So let's talk a little bit more about that, Carrie. How many, can you tell us about a speed bump you've had?
Yeah, I've had a few. but I think I started in the engineering track, and I was, you know, very vested in that part of my career. I loved being an engineer and leading engineering teams. I was a kind of a through and through engineer. And then, like Heidi, I have two children and my youngest daughter. I was at work one day, and I was traveling an hour to our Natick facility and back, and just making it, like just making the family work thing. And engineering is hard in that there's not a lot of flexibility at the time. And I got this call that my daughter was being rushed to the hospital, and we found out she had chronic asthma, and I really had to make a choice. And I loved working, and I loved being an engineer, and I loved being at Boston Scientific. And we had a facility just 20 minutes from home, and there was this group that did this clinical thing, and they had these people that worked from home. And I wanted to do that, but I just didn't know what it was. And I met some great women, and this is where I think women in STEM, having that strong community of people that can hold you up and believe in you when maybe you aren't sure what you need yourself. And these group of women I had met said, you know what, come do this project for us, see if you like it. I did it, and within a month they offered me a job, and I have been on this whirlwind tour of the clinical world for the last 5 years. And it was totally different. I had no idea what I was doing, but talking about facing that fear, it was, I loved to work, I loved being at Boston Scientific, but I needed a change, and I jumped in. I totally jumped in, and I could have definitely failed because I had no idea what I was doing, but I had those people to hold me up, and I had a lot of women, a very strong group of women to hold me up and get me through that. It was great. It's been one of the best moves I've made.
That is fantastic. You know, I was talking with some of the girls from Girls Inc. who are right here that we have also brought to the conference, and we were talking about the fact that you need to be open in your life, that you may say, I want to be a physician, or I want to be a physician's assistant, or I want to be an engineer, and life is going to happen, and you're going to find some different pathways, and as long as you're open to it, it looks and sounds like you can find that success.
Yeah, and I think just to add to that, I mean, what I love about being an engineer is solving problems, and I think it's about knowing what your passion is, and then it opens a whole bunch of doors, because I still solve those problems today, just in a totally different environment. So I get
Wonderful.
To keep that engineering at heart.
Great. We're getting a little feedback. I don't know whether anyone else can hear it. Is it because I'm too close? But okay, there we go. So Mona and I actually work in the same division, and a little while ago, a couple years ago, Mona came and tried to give me something. Do you remember what that was?
Your
resignation letter. Oh, that. Yeah. Her resignation letter. To which I said,
no.
No. No. So tell us, you know, Mona, you've been with Boston now about 10 years, right? You came to us with the Guidant acquisition. You've been a vice president, very, very skilled, a very good leader, and an excellent role model within Boston. And now you're currently role modeling something different that we came up with when you decided that you needed to have a life change. Could you tell the audience a little bit about that?
Absolutely. And first of all, I have a lot of people to thank for what Lisa's talking about is unprecedented in a Fortune 500 company. And I currently have the ability to work 3 days a week, which for a vice president level position is unheard of. And just to give you a little bit of sort of context as to what that, why that that occurred. So, as Lisa said, I started 10 years ago, and I was brought in to launch one of our products in the neuromodulation division, and the business was about $5 million at that time. Tiny little business. So basically call it a startup. And it grew to about $400, $450 million in the span of very, very quickly, like 5-8 years. And being in a startup, you all have heard about the startup war stories, right? It basically takes your life. I was on the road
about 20 weekends out of a year for 5 to 8 years straight. And so at some point, you sort of say, you know, if you heard the previous speakers, fabulous 40s hit me. And I had not put family first. And you also have heard throughout the day people talking about family first. I could not have put family first in the role that I played. And so I got to the fabulous 40s and looked around and said, wait a second, you know what? My kids are going to be in high school. My parents are in their 80s. And I feel like I'm going to miss out on something if this is the path I continue on. And so that's when I came, you know, sort of self-awareness and coming over to Lisa and saying, you know what? Things have got to change. And like I said, I have to give a lot of credit to Lisa, to Malik Nanavati, who's the president of our division, Mike Mahoney, because this is unprecedented. And I'm just really, you know, Boston Scientific, it's amazing that they've taken a risk such as that. And actually, I actually now feel like I do have it all.
Oh, that's great. And you changed jobs as well. So you were the vice president of marketing.
Yes,
I was. And you changed roles.
I did. I took on the role of clinical training and fellowship education. Now, I do need to make a call out to my wonderful senior manager in the front row here, Victoria Telvis, because I couldn't do what I was doing and take the role I did without having an unbelievable team and a leader of that team that allowed me to do what I'm doing and that I can still contribute. So that has been a tremendous sort of blessing, is what I would call Victoria.
So I think that story really illustrates for many of us the fact that you can have some non-negotiables in your life, and it doesn't mean you have to walk away. And so we would encourage you to continue to explore any of those opportunities with your current employer or other employers, as you've heard not only from Mona and the rest of our panelists, but from other panelists today, is that you just have to make it work for you. And if you don't ask, you'll never know what you can get, right? And then how to be open to those opportunities. So Marilee, how about you? Speed bump along the way?
Well, I don't have a specific one single speed bump, but I will tell you, having four children, definitely.
You have four speed bumps.
Four speed bumps in succession. But after every child, that does, you have to rethink how things work in your life and with your spouse or partner, and how you're going to negotiate what happens next. And so for each of those, we had to have that conversation or try to figure out what was going to happen. And in my early career, I traveled a lot, and my husband is an engineer and was kind of the steady state. He didn't have to travel, and so that worked out great for us. I remember, though, it's not easy. I remember when I'm on the road calling home and thinking, oh, you know, are my kids going to end up okay, or is this going to ruin them for life? And he'd be able to calm me down and say, you know what, they're happy, healthy, well-adjusted, and they're doing just fine, and you are giving them a role model of what women in this world can be. And so having a partner like that, I think, you know, is really helpful for me. The great thing is that in this role that I've taken on, I don't travel much anymore, very little. He was able to take on a role as a director of global field devices for Honeywell, and so he's traveling to China and the Czech Republic. But I can be the one who's stable at home while I still have a great, fulfilling career and something that I'm really interested in doing.
I was going to say, when you were traveling, you had impact in a lot of different areas, but now you have a really deep impact in Minnesota, right? So do you feel that impact differently in the jobs that you've had?
Well, I'd say the impact is different because my original in marketing, I was out dealing with physicians and in the market and in the industry of medical device. In this role, I'm dealing in my community. So knowing, you know, what are the challenges and issues in our communities? What are the challenges of students and schools, of our economy, of our economic development? And so learning all of that was a great opportunity for me and a different focus. And then it was also focused on our employees. And a big passion of mine is engaging our employees and finding a way for them to fulfill passions, personal passions and professional passions at work. And so being able to find opportunities and align those passions by me just removing barriers and providing resources, and then watching that engagement happen with our employees was really fascinating. So I really enjoyed kind of that focus from an audience of physicians and patient-oriented into employees and our community.
That's terrific. And if I had asked you 10 years ago, do you know where you're going to be, would you have been able to answer that question?
Not at all.
No? Heidi, how about you? Could you have answered that question 10 years ago? Do you know where you're going to be?
Probably not. Okay. I would have said a very different thing. So.
Okay. Carrie, what about you?
Oh, absolutely not.
Mona?
Not one bit.
And don't add absolutely not. Yeah, it's just amazing how your life plans can change, but they can change for so much of a positive reason that you never have the visibility to at the time that you're making the decisions. And one of the things I always say, a decision is just a decision until you make another one. And so if it doesn't work, you find the way to make it work, right? So how about we go to the audience and see if you have any questions that you would like to ask one of the panelists. Okay, great. There's a microphone right up there, and Lizelle's going to follow you because you get a fabulous parting prize for being the first person to answer a question. So you get a $10 Starbucks gift certificate so that you can take a friend to coffee and continue the conversation, as Lizelle says.
Thank you.
Can you introduce yourself, please?
My name is Susan. I work in technology in a technology department in contract research organization. So technology, but in a scientific area.
Great.
Like some of you, I don't really know the science. I just know the technology part. But I started off with an accounting degree, so you're not the only one. Mm-hmm. I have a question around, a lot of people are saying you need to understand what your non-negotiables are and make sure you ask for them. I don't think anybody's really broached how you approach that conversation, because most likely you're going to have that conversation with a man who may not understand where you're coming from. So have any of you got any advice on how to approach it and what to do and probably what not to do as well, so that that becomes either a successful one way or another in making your decision whether you're going to stay or go or whatever happens next?
Great, great question, Susan. Who'd like to take that?
I'll take that.
Okay.
You know, you'll be surprised what your non-negotiables in your head are, and when you sort of put them out there, you usually kind of make it, at least in my career, it's always been no, so I've always been fearful of asking, and I've often been surprised at the answer, just like Lisa pointed to, right? So there's a couple of things that I would offer up to you. One is that you got to take the chance, and if it's a non-negotiable, you're either going to take that forward and they're going to work it out, or guess what? You're going to have to figure out something else anyways, right? So at least work that path out. And the other thing is that I have actually been impressed with, just in the last, I would say, less than 5 years, there has been so much more recognition of these issues and challenges, if they're, you know, family balance and such, of those issues, that people are becoming a lot more open-minded than we necessarily think they might be. And so put context around what your non-negotiable is, why you're putting it forward, and go ask. I mean, you're going to make a choice there. You probably don't want to be there if that non-negotiable is not addressed.
And I would say, being in the human resources field, there's a difference between asking and demanding, right? Mm-hmm. So sometimes the demands don't get you what you want. And then, unfortunately, as women, we often get labeled when we start demanding unfairly, labeled with, you can imagine the kind of words that you could get labeled with. I'm happy to say that I don't see that at our company. I see men and women and all kinds of different families and family structures all having similar issues. So I have a gentleman right now who's working part-time because his adult son died and his wife is having a tough time. And so he's working three-quarter time so he can be home more with his wife to help her through this. So it really is universal, and I know this is a women's conference, but I think to Mona's point, it's understanding that the world is changing. Has it changed as rapidly, probably, as we want it to or need it to? No. But men are really good for asking what they want. Women, we're not so good at that. And we have to get better. And so I'd say frame it as an ask. Talk about your value to the business and things you've brought, and then how this could be a way that you could continue to bring value, but it would also bring you more balance in your life. Make sense? Okay. Looks like we have another question.
Yeah. Do I get a $5 gift certificate?
No. You, oh. You get $10, too.
Really was joking, but...
We're not.
Thank you. I get the. It's like a magic wand to continue with the earlier. So my name is Mill, and I'm actually a very much a fish out of water because I'm not a STEM person. I'm a trained mediator and negotiator, and I work with a lot of women on issues like climate change, and hence why the interest in STEM.
Wonderful.
And a lot of the work I'm doing now is on training more women to be more effective negotiators in the climate change negotiations. It's my secret belief that if there were more women at the table, more women in STEM, that the issues we see on climate change would be greatly improved. And the research shows that there are usually, on average, only 18% women in those negotiations. So it's my personal passion to fix that. But
good
along
for you.
The way... The question I have for you is on sort of a higher policy level. When you remember in Hillary Clinton's remarks, she talked about when she was overseas, she would not use a women's rights argument in places like Saudi Arabia or India or wherever. She would use what I call a business case. She would say, as a nation, your GDP is going to improve if you have more women. So I am currently collecting examples of research when, if you bring more women to the table, what happens? So I have economic ones, I have GDP, I have an FAO study about women in agriculture. There's a recent one from Berkeley about women and climate change, which I was like, we're getting closer. So for you who are in the STEM field, my question is, as ambassadors, if you will, about attracting more women into STEM, what are your personal sort of smoking gun arguments? Do you use a personal argument, or do you have research under your elbow that shows that when more women are in STEM, fill in the blank happens? So it's kind of an open question, but anything, your favorite research, I'd love to hear it. Thank you.
Carrie, do you have, you want to field that?
I'm trying to think. Actually, we had a conversation last night about, I think, was it you, Mona? Actually, I might pass it over to Mona about your the research that you had been quoting last night about women around
yes.
the table.
Yeah, so perfect question. In preparation for this, I was looking at, and I had read several months back about the value of bringing women around the table. And so there's research actually done by Carnegie Mellon and MIT Professor Malone where they've shown that...
I know that one.
Yes, where it's an incredible... It's a linear graph. So what they've shown is when you have... when you bring women to the table, you increase the overall cognitive intelligence of the group. And it's uncanny. It actually, every time you add more women, the cognitive intelligence of the group increases. And this was, they were surprised. They thought that they would find the research showing that when you get the people with the highest IQs together, that would increase the cognitive intelligence, but no. And what was really interesting is some of the theories as to why that happens. And one of the theories is that when you have the same type of people around the table, all white men, all, let's just even say, all Indian women, we would think that the person next to us understands and gets what we're saying. So we share very little of the information, right? They already know what I'm going to be saying. When there's different people around the table, you actually look around and you're like, they're never going to get what I'm saying unless I elaborate more. And when I elaborate more, guess what? You get other people's kind of ideas flicking around the table and you start getting better solutions. And what's interesting is that they said that especially when it comes to innovation and complex problems, you're going to need a diverse team. And that's really, those are the things that we've got in front of us that we really have to tackle. And adding more women to that conversation is going to produce a better answer. And I was like blown away, absolutely loved it. We need to get that research out wide and publicly. And they've actually done this twice. And the results have been both times the same thing.
And that fits along with other research that we know that the collaborative skills and the partnership skills that women bring in organizations actually helps the organization solve the problems. And I think it fits with that is because there is sharing going on versus competition. I don't have to withhold the information. I can share that information and we can build on that. And actually, when Mona read that article, she sent it to our whole management board. And so we do that. We try, I think every time we talk, we're talking about not just women's issues, but all kinds of issues to help spark different kinds of conversation that help us build our culture. I wonder if either Mary Lee or Heidi, do you have anything you'd like to add?
I think from a business perspective, even why we focus on STEM and women in STEM is that it really is important for us to be reflecting the demographics of our world and of the patients that we treat. And that if that voice isn't at the table and isn't helping us to create what we need, then we aren't going to be meeting the needs of our world or of the women. But I also think that women have a tendency to have that altruistic goal as well. And so even talking to us about the legacy that we leave, whether it's climate or healthcare, if it is the difference that we can make in this world, the impact that we as women can have and the influence that we have on our families, I think those are great discussions to have with women that engage them. And my last comment is just for these wonderful women here, young women here looking at careers, that there are so many ways that you can influence the world in climate change, in health, in answering and solving energy problems by looking at STEM careers. So just a little plug and encouragement.
And I love that because you have a really hard job because the first way you have to get to the table is to convince a lot of people that there is an issue. Right, so negotiation has to even start with how do you get to the table on an issue, whether it's your salary, your working hours, or climate. So thank you. Great, let's head over here and then we'll come back.
She's like, where's the money?
She's like, where's my gift card?
I love it.
I've taken your example.
Taking me out to coffee so I can play
both. Okay, good job.
Terry Cantor. I work for EMC.
Hi, Terry.
I'm a STEM. I'm a computer science major, and I'm an instructional designer and course developer right now. And this field has been wonderful for me, the opportunities it has afforded me. But I had a question. I came in late, and I came in during Mona's portion of the discussion. And one of the things I'm curious about is with your change in your schedule, has it impacted your relationship with your peers? Do you feel that you're able to be as productive as you would be working ungodly hours, 5, 6, 7 days of the week, especially particularly at your level? Do you feel that it has impacted how your peers and possibly how people in positions below yours look at you, work with you? Have you seen any negative connotations? And how have you dealt with that?
Great question. And Lisa probably can help me sort of mirror the answer I get because she works with the people that I work with. You know, in some ways, I feel like there is a bank that you sort of have put a lot of kind of brownie points into. And you've built your reputation, and that wealth of knowledge that you developed over now a decade, right? You still can bring that to the table. And so I don't believe that I've witnessed people saying, you know, she's only part-time.
And I think that that comes from the fact that you bring still very valid conclusions, opportunities, views of the world that come from just having worked very hard, you know. So at least I haven't seen it, but Lisa can tell me the truth.
I haven't seen it either. I haven't heard it, in fact. And I think the harder thing that we're actually dealing with is how do you virtually manage? That is probably a harder conversation right now in our culture than the part-time or working from home, which we are actually doing a lot more of. And it may not be a formal telecommuting schedule every day, but it could be one day a week or 2 days a week. And it's learning how to be virtually present and fully present at meetings. And it's very difficult when you're on conference calls. I mean, I feel for Mona, sometimes she's on 8-hour staff meeting calls, and it is really hard to try and pay attention and hear everybody. So I'd actually like, Carrie, I was thinking, you have a little bit differently in your world because you physically went to work at home full time. So yeah. Can you talk a little bit about what changes have you seen any changes?
Sure. Yeah. So I mean, when I was in the engineering, when I was in R&D and corporate research at Boston Scientific and my other roles, I mean, there was no way to do the job other than to be there. I mean, I was running laboratories or managing groups that were in laboratories, even in senior management roles. You really had to be there full time. And I also worked with all men all the time. My first two roles, my first role was the only woman in the company, and my second role, I was only the second woman engineer they'd ever had. And then in Boston Scientific, there were more women, but it was still predominantly men. And then I went to clinical research, and it was all women. And it was a totally different environment. First time I saw someone cry at work, I was like, what is going on?
Yeah, engineers don't like that.
No, that never happened. But, I did go into the office. I still went into the office like 1 or 2 days a week. But it was a really interesting transition. And I was talking to the women last night. I went from, you know, you really couldn't work unless you were in the lab. Or you could do some data analysis and emails. But when I went to work from home, I mean, these women, one of my colleagues, Karen Footit, is in the back there. She used to work in monitoring, too. These women work 24/7, no hour of the day was off limits, and a lot of the women were working mothers, and it was not uncommon. I can distinctly remember, I'd only been on the job a couple weeks, and one of my colleagues called me up, and she knew I had kids. She had kids. It was 7 o'clock in the morning, and she's like, turn on Nickelodeon, we have to talk. Like, put the kids away. And it was a totally different environment, but we were all in it together, and I think the environment in clinical right now still is very virtual, and there is a sense of having to really be present and on conference calls and really making that conscious effort, and also making the conscious effort when you can see people. If anybody is traveling into the office, we do a lot of communication that we do physically see people. There is a power to being in front of people. So it's a tricky balance between those two. And I know it was said on another panel that I was talking on, and I think, you know, I've seen women do it really, really well, and then some people not do it so well. I mean, having a 2-year-old all day long and trying to work from home is not working from home. You got to also be realistic about what it means. You know, working from home, you still have to actually work.
You still have to work, right? Yeah. Heidi, I saw you raise your eyebrows when Carrie said that the first job she had, she was the only woman. What was that expression about over there?
Oh, so my first job out of college was at a small, small startup company, and there were about a dozen or so male engineers. There was an executive assistant, and there was the founder of the company. His name is Manny Villafania, and he started CPI Guidant. He started St. Jude, and I think one other company before he started Helix Biocore. And he was my first real interview out of college. And talk about intimidating. This was a man who had raised $10 million on Black Monday in 1987. And I went to work there. I was the only woman in the lab. And it was very tough because my first time walking into the break room, I got the up and down. And, okay, this was in the late 80s, but that was really difficult to deal with. And very quickly thereafter, at my urging, I hope, a little bit, but we did hire an additional 3 women. And those 3 women and myself ended up, over the course of a few years, all having our first child. And we are still in contact with each other because we supported each other in ways that family usually does. We babysat each other's children. We had cell cultures running that needed to be fed on the weekend. And if somebody's spouse or partner was gone, we would go to their house and babysit for them while they ran in and fed those cell cultures. So it quickly changed at that little company. But one of the things I'm most passionate about, I know the girls just left, but is encouraging girls and young women to go into and to stay in STEM subjects in school. Because I no longer want to be, I'm no longer the only person, the only woman at the table, but I want more women to be at the table. So, yeah, that was a pretty unique experience. And now it's considered unique. I hope that it will become non-existent very soon.
It'll be nice when we get to at least 50-50.
Yes.
Right?
I'm sorry. Lisa,
yes.
Can I add one more thing?
Sure.
Because I still see there some very young women here that are going to be making career choices. And, you know, what Heidi said about STEM subjects, and a lot of girls say, I don't like science, I don't like math. But what I found was that the work I do now is a lot different than the work I studied. And just having that background will allow you to do so many things. Like, I did marketing. I mean, you know, when you talk to girls at your age, you're like, I'd love to do marketing. Well, you can do it, but guess what? You'll have the opportunity to do so many other things with that kind of a background. And so I did want to make sure, because I personally did not like all my subjects. I was not the best at math in high school. I was good, but I wasn't great. And so, you know, you can get through a lot of things and just stick to it.
Wonderful. Thank you. Question over here.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about your career transitions away from the bench, and specifically, how did you do it? Do you ever miss working at the bench? And what do you think of the different opportunities for people who stay at the bench as opposed to transition away from it? Thank you.
Carrie, you want to take that?
Sure. Yeah, there are days that I would love to suit back up in my bunny suit and go sit in an isolator and make formulations all day long. So, I mean, it was tough, but I think I had grown to that part of my career when I made that transition, when I was managing a pretty large team, and I really loved leading. Like, I had a passion for leading groups. I had a real passion for leading change. And there are, like I said, there are days when I miss that piece, but I think it's about knowing what is inspiring to you at that time, you know. And at that point in my career, I was, you know, the bigger the challenge, the bigger the change initiative, the bigger the group that I could lead through change, the more exciting it was to me, whether it was technology, whether it was, you know, taking something I knew from engineering and applying it to clinical research. So for me, though, I will always, you know, I still tinker at home. We have more engineering toys than you could possibly imagine in my house. But it's about knowing where your passion is leading you. And at that time, it was really about getting that opportunity to lead a larger group. So it was tough to go, but it was good. And I think, you know, to hand it over to Heidi, you've gone back and forth. You've
yes.
gone to management yes. and then back to the bench, really.
Yeah. So I'm not actually in a lab in this role, but I do a lot of data analysis. And I'd also like to say I've had to do a lot of writing, technical writing. So I put the performance data, the reliability data for all of our implantable defibrillators and pacemakers online for everyone to see. It's called the Product Performance Report. And the one thing that this does is allow me to keep a hand or a foot, or sometimes a leg, in all things technical and data analysis. But it has also allowed me to learn things that I never dreamed I would be learning. So one of the things that I don't miss about management is budgeting. But one of the things I do miss is working with people. And this role allowed me to start working with people externally as well. So I got exposure to working directly with physicians on a much more frequent basis, speaking to not just physicians, but to increasingly now people from value analysis committees at large hospital systems, and how they can use that data to make decisions about what companies and which devices last longer. If our batteries last longer, which ours do, then you have, as a patient, less device changeouts over the course of your lifetime, and that saves our whole healthcare system money. And so I have picked up skills from someone I work for now who used to be in sales and marketing that I never thought I would pick up. When I was in the lab, my first job, I always called marketing the dark side. No offense, ladies.
And she's bookended by two marketing people.
I learned so much from that expert in that field about how to communicate and how to present these data, all things technical, to our customers, to our physicians, to those value analysis committees. So that's something I never thought I would be learning, but I did.
Great. Wonderful. Question over here.
Yes, thank you. My name's Kate. I work for EMC as well. I am a team lead for our Global Services Associate Program. And essentially what our program is, it's a what we do is we recruit and train new hires into the services organization. So generally people with technical skills or engineering backgrounds. We train them for about 8 weeks through an eight-week boot camp. And my question is, a big push for us or initiative for 2015 is to both recruit and retain women engineers. So what is your advice for us to do that, essentially?
So I'm going to have Marilee start with this, because you do so much work in the community to really generate sponsorship and mentorship and really that ability for students to grow through the field and to also be employed in the field. So do you want to take that?
Well, I think there are a couple of different answers. So the first, I think, back to a comment I made earlier, I do think that women are particularly interested in making a difference. And so if there's something that you can tie in the work that they will be doing and will be interested in how it will impact their worlds, their families, I think that is a driver. I do think that's part of the reason why Boston Scientific is successful and having almost double the number of average female engineers is because we are focused on saving and improving lives. So I think that makes a difference. And then I think investing early and getting engaged with these young women early in high school, college, and starting to build that rapport and those relationships and making those connections early so that they recognize you, as well as some of those societies like Society of Women Engineers, and getting engaged not just in looking at that recruitment point, but how do we get engaged in terms of working with them on campus.
Great. Carrie, you had a comment.
Yeah, I mean, I don't work in recruiting, but I think just from my own personal experience, I had the opportunity to intern at Bose, and I was under a woman who, I think, you know, getting women in early and through college and through internships and then partnering them with strong mentors that are going to help them through their collegiate experience, which can be difficult. There was, you know, I was in a program with only six women and the rest were men, and we had no female professors. I had no women mentors until I went into this internship, and luckily I had this woman, and actually she was the only woman in the department in management, but mentored me all through my beginning of my career, and it was very, very impactful for helping me stay on that trajectory as a female engineer. So I think about the internship programs is a really important piece.
And one other, I'll just add, I think a high value that we've seen, because we do also with the mentoring of young women coming through, but to also provide them some opportunities to learn. So we recognize how they present themselves, presentation skills, interview skills, knowing how to use Outlook. Oh my goodness, you don't use Outlook in college. So I think even just those things to provide that confidence to young women that when they're going into the workplace, they kind of know what they're doing and what's expected is really helpful for them.
I think to the engagement piece also, you know, one of the things that we've seen is if you engage larger than your company and you engage into the community or you engage with the patients or you engage with your customers, whoever that is, that really ties them to a broader mission than just their job.
And I think that's what people are looking for when they come in, is something that's just bigger than their job, that has opportunities for advancement and opportunities to do something that helps to give back as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. We got the 10-minute sign, which is like now like 7 minutes. So we will stay and answer questions, but we probably only have time for one more. Sorry.
Hi. My name is Stacy, and I'm a civil engineer for a construction company in Boston. And my question has to do with pay equality, and I hear a lot about women don't necessarily negotiate as much or are as successful. And being a couple years in my first job, I tried to negotiate right off with no success, didn't have practice. And that's fine, and I've learned from it. But what sort of resources are available to check in the STEM fields to know if you're even getting paid, or how to like check your salary versus others' salary to even, you know, be more informed and come to that discussion better to negotiate?
Good question. You want to take that, or you want me to?
I bet you can give more resources.
I was going to add. See, they don't want to answer because they don't want to tell us what they're out looking at. but one of the first things you could probably start with is, even within your company, they probably have salary bands or salary grades that you're assigned to. So I'd ask for those. And they use a concept called midpoint, which is actually a market reference point for a job, meaning if you went out and looked at 5 or 6 similar companies, that is the area in which most people pay, right? So you call that 100% of that market reference point. I think the other thing you could do is, you know, the U.S. Department of Labor has a ton of information and statistics about salaries. And then I'd look at things like Fortune and Money, and they'll give you the average salary of those. Now, it's a little bit more difficult because it's very generalized, so you might want to look within the Boston area as an example, and you could just put Boston, salary surveys, engineering, and that will help you to begin to drive down a little bit deeper. And then you can also go on, as I said, the U.S. Labor Relations Board has information, and BLN, and then you can go actually by job title itself. The other is look in the paper, look online, look on LinkedIn, look at Monster, look at Indeed.com, look at all the areas where jobs are posted that might have a salary range, or just call up and ask, which is always my favorite. Hi, how much do you pay?
I would like to add to that.
Yes.
My youngest brother is a chemical engineer, and there's a publication called CNE News within his field. And a lot of times, publications within your own field will have salary surveys that they publish. And so within a specific field, oftentimes you can find that information. And it may not be locale specific, but you can get national averages that way.
I would like to say, if you're, I'm not sure how long you've been out of school, but a lot, if you go back to your university, a lot of local universities too, through their career center, still as a graduate, you can go back, and they actually have a lot of information, including salary information, that you might be able to tap into.
And also, did you say you tried 2 years ago? Okay, have you tried again? Okay, yeah. That would be, go girl, yeah. Try again. Get your facts in order, try and find some more information, and try again. 2 years is a long time to wait. And so you said, I tried it 2 years ago, and it didn't work, and it's okay. So I'd reframe that answer. I tried 2 years ago, it didn't work, it's not okay. I'm going to try again. Okay?
And
you'll
keep
do
trying.
It. Keep trying.
Keep trying.
All right. All right. So what we'd like to do now is we've got a couple gifts for you. So on the chairs, this is about planting seeds. So on the chairs, there's a seed stick attached to a Boston card that has a quote on it. And if you plant that in the ground, it will actually grow a plant. So we're also going to not only physically give you seeds, but we're going to have each one of our panelists give you their seeds of wisdom from what they've encountered in their careers to date. So why don't we start with Mara Lee?
So I won't be able to read it directly, but I'll give you basically what I meant. I think it's really important, and the thing that I learned is to be really clear about what you value in your life and what you want for your life, and use that to create priorities. And then as things come into your life, women aren't that great about making boundaries, but you really need to be able to make boundaries aligned to your values. And it allows you to, when things come your way, you can easily judge, does this meet my, you know, my priorities and what I value, or is this going to take me off track? And I think it's a nice way to be able to make sure that you're making the right decisions for you.
Great. Heidi.
So I think one of the times in my life when I had kind of a stall in my career, it's been fairly recent, and the thing that I realized that I was not doing was staying engaged. I was allowing other things, not setting those boundaries, to fill up my time, what excess time I did have, and they weren't helping me. And so when I started getting engaged again on LinkedIn with my network of fellow coworkers from other companies that were all in various places, with other women in particular, and within my own field, expanding into working with other companies, our competitors, to develop standards for how we report data to the public. So those are the kinds of things that really got me re-energized and re-engaged, was staying engaged. And the level that you get engaged at with your peers, with other people, within your own field, it can change from time to time. And like Marilee said, just engage at the level that you find right for you at the time.
Thank you. Carrie.
So, I mean, career paths aren't straight. Maybe they are for some people, but they're not for me. And you know, it's about the journey, and make sure you share what you learn along the way. And you're going to fail. Everybody fails, and you're going to be better for it. You're going to learn from it, and if you're honest with yourself, you'll take a lot from that. And but enjoy it along the way. I mean, I think sometimes we can be so focused on where we're headed that we forget to be where we are right now. And I mean, that might sound simple, but I think it's been something that's helped me along the way for sure.
Profound. Mona.
You know, we've heard throughout the conference, I think, about women often kind of having it in their head, kind of over-criticizing themselves, right? And I think you really have to just recognize when that happens. And honestly, I mean, you take a look around the people, you are probably way underestimating your capabilities, and you really need to start telling yourself you are stronger than you believe, you are more capable than you let yourself be, and you're smarter than you think. And let those things out, because we often let the voice inside from letting us really demonstrate that.
Wonderful. And I'd like to just say, take charge, right? Take charge of your career. Take charge of your salary, take charge of your boundaries, take charge of your life. And once you begin to feel that power and confidence that you have, I think it goes along with everything that our panelists have said today, is that then you're able to give, and then you're able to give back. And I loved what Hillary said about a special, or Madeleine Albright actually said to her, right, there's a little special place for those that don't help other women. And I loved that. I thought, that's true, right? We don't have, you know, the good old boys club was you had to get into the club and then they didn't help the rest. Well, we don't need a good old world's women's club, right? This is about reaching out, joining hands in a partnership and helping people up. And then when you're there, help the next person behind you. And also, I think it's just part of the golden rule, is just remember to say thank you to everybody that comes into your career and even in your life. So I'd like to do that today by thanking Marilee, Heidi, Carrie, Mona. Thank you for your participation. Thank you for the prepping. Thank you for sharing with our audience, and for all of you that are here, thank you for coming, and we'll stay around and answer some questions. Thanks a lot. Have a great day.